Okay, so bearing in mind it's a few minutes after, if anybody comes in, we'll just send them to the back of the room and we'll all go quiet and make them feel terrible. No, we'll encourage them in. Okay, so my talk today is about your attitude as your life. And that's obviously an issue that you all wanted to come and sit in on. And it's not as simple as good attitude, bad attitude, because we are a mixture of loads of different things. We might have a tendency towards one thing, like optimism or pessimism, but rarely are we in that mode all the time. And in fact, even optimists are infuriating if they're forever optimistic, because you can look at them and go, well, you can't really feel happy about that, surely, in these very circumstances at the moment. So you can find it annoying because it's, you know damn well that they're just plastering over something that's happening in their life. So this is all about how your mind works and how you can deal with it in a quick and simple format. And to do that, I need to tell you about the two different ways in which the brain operates. This is not two separate bits of the brain, because the brain is made up of lots of bits that all work together. But in general, there is the conscious part of the brain. That's the bit where we're aware of what's going on. And the unconscious part that does everything else. And it's a bit like your recycling bin. There's the things that you put in clean and washed and you put them in there, and then there's everything else goes in the other bin. Well, your unconscious is the everything else bit. If you're not aware of it, it's working in your unconscious. And so the way it works is the conscious brain is the bit that we understand who we are with. And although we might think, oh, we're really clever or we're not really clever, that conscious bit of the brain holds 8 bits of data, which, to put it in perspective, is if I was to tell you my phone number now and then say, just remember that, and I kept talking, you would either remember my phone number or you'd be able to follow me talking, but you wouldn't be able to do both because it literally fills the memory up. Right? 8 bits of data. Your unconscious, however, holds 100 trillion data points that can all connect to each other. So the brain, the unconscious brain, is thought to be at least 1 million times more powerful than the conscious. And this is why I call it the unconscious rather than the subconscious, because it's so powerful, it's not sub, it's not under anything. It might be under our awareness, but it's actually more powerful. So I always call it the unconscious, or you can call it the epiconscious, above consciousness. And it also taps into things outside of itself, but that's a talk for another day entirely. So we have these two bits. Now, inside your unconscious brain is everything you've ever learned. And what happens is we actually start to load up these programs from being born. We have some we arrive with. So our lungs, heart, blood, temperature, pH values, the whole thing, your body knows exactly what to do with you. If you cut yourself within a second of being born, it knows how to actually repair those cells. It's a fantastic process. Our body is so complex, and yet, I mean, how we live more than a few seconds, I never know, because it's so many interrelated things that all sort of have to work in harmony with each other. And your unconscious brain is working all those. It's also working everything you ever learn. And it learns this by repetition. So everything we do, when you first ever do something, however clever you are or bright you are, when you first do something, you actually feel a bit, oh, God, I'm not sure about this, how it works. And you feel a bit clumsy and a bit awkward with it and so on. Once you've done it a few times, you feel a bit better with it. Once you've done it lots of times, you actually find yourself having a chat while you're doing it. And you can actually do it, and then you sort of like, oh, how did I do that? Because you've passed it to your unconscious, and it goes, oh, I love that. Now, if anybody works with people where there's somebody at work who's really busy all the time but gets things done, and then there's lazy people there, you actually know if you want a job done, you give it to the busy one. Because the lazy one will still sit on it for the next 2 days. The busy one will somehow find in their time schedule a little slot where they can fit this in, because that's what they do. And your unconscious is no different to that. If it's doing 100,000 things in a day and you give it two more jobs, it's not bothered. It's two more jobs, 100,000. If you give it to your conscious, it goes, oh God, I've got these other 14 things to think of. Oh God, you know, don't give me any more work. And if we try and alter things by consciousness, we're actually doing this thing where we're trying to overcome the 100 trillion connections that work at 100 times the speed with our 8 bits of data. Right? So when we try and take on a new thing and we go, right, I'm not going to eat much anymore, but I'm going to go jogging, it actually can't relate the two things across. It goes, oh God, but we always eat a lot, you know, you like food, you know. And then it goes, jogging, oh God, you go jogging, you'll hate it after a few days, your knees will ache and you get all sweaty and you know, before work and you haven't got the time. And it gives you all the reasons why the program it's currently running is far better than the one you're going to put in there. That's if you try and do it with your conscious. So my idea is to pass it to the unconscious. And to do that, I've designed some methods that are really quick and ready where you can actually access your unconscious. And you can talk to it the same as you just talk normally. Because we've all got a voice in our head. And if anybody's actually saying, well, I haven't got a voice in my head, that's the voice. Okay? So we've all got a voice in our head that tells us stuff. But the things it tells us is from this loop. So it will only give you answers that it has the answers already for, but pre-prepared. And when something's triggered off in your head, it's from one of these automatic loops. But because the unconscious brain works 100 times the speed of your conscious brain, and we're absorbing things all the time, we'll actually see something or hear something or smell something that triggers off an old memory. We're not consciously aware of what that is straight away. We'll suddenly feel, oh my God, what's happening? We either get angry or sad or cross or something. Something happens and we go, why am I feeling like this? And then you look around and then consciously you work it out.
Sorry.
And it might be that you're going down the high street and a little old lady goes past and she's wearing the same perfume as your auntie wore, and your auntie used to crack you around the head every time she saw you. And so this person goes past and next thing you know, you're quite anxious. And you don't even work out what it is. You just get this anxious feeling because the two things are connected in your head. Smell that, do this. Right? And the same with everything else in life. We have a... If something's emotionally charged, we will store it with absolutely every feeling we had with it at the time. And if we get enough of those connections joining up together at something else, it joins together and pretends it's the same as the last thing. Now, we have to learn things by generalising them. So when you came in here, you might not have seen these chairs before, but you knew it was a chair. You knew how to sit on it. You knew what it was for. And, you know, you haven't seen it before. But you can generalise a chair. You can have the most obscure chair in the world and go, that's a chair, and still be able to sit on it. If we didn't have that process of generalising, we would actually, every day, we'd have to go out and relearn everything for new. That'd be a hell of a job, wouldn't it? We'd all be like baby stage again. Right? So when we learn something, we usually learn it by repetition. And a really good example is a car. When we learn to drive, we actually get in the car and... Darling, did you bring my water?
No, but I can go and get it.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, fine. When we learn to drive, we actually we get in the car and we're told this is the accelerator, and this is the clutch, and this is the gear lever. And what I want you to do is put the clutch in and then put it into gear. And now you've got to do this balancing act where this one goes down, but this one comes up. And you think, that's pretty stupid. Why can't they both go down? Or why can't they be joined to each other? Something, you know. So they're telling you this, and then they go, oh, no, not too much of that. And go slowly on this, and a bit quicker than that. And you're doing all this, and then he goes, mirror. And you go, you've got to be kidding. I can't do this, and mirror. But now you get in the car, and you just do that, and you're not even aware of it. Okay. So the more we do something, the more it becomes this regular thing. And I've got an automatic now, but I jump in a car that's manual, I just still drive. might crunch the gears the first few times when I get in it. So this is how the two aspects of the mind work, the conscious and the unconscious. Virtually everything we've learned in the past, we hold on to. And it just comes up automatically for us. So we don't have to think about lots of things. We can get on with what's new in our life or what's worrying us or whatever. But this is like the conveyor belt at the airport. You leave your luggage and then you go and collect it. Now, the person putting this is the five-year-old version of you. Because 80% of everything you know about life, you learned before you were six. So when you get this emotion or this feeling that you can't cope with, that actually is a five-year-old messing with you. But that's for 80% of everything you've ever learned about life. And if you think that you learn 80% of it before you're six, you're not actually learning it. You're taking it on from other people. You're actually absorbing everybody around you. Now, if you're brought up in a warm, loving, caring household, that's brilliant because you're shown love and affection and attention and so on. If you're brought up in an abusive or neglected childhood, you actually set off all the wrong ideas about life. And you need to realise that things that are affecting you now are affecting you back there. So I want to talk about past, present and future. Every second of your life has been lived in the now. Right? You could only ever live in the now. You never live in it any other time. So all your nows that you call the past were nows at that very time that you were doing them. Right? That's all you knew. You knew what had happened before. You might have a little bit of a guess at what's going to happen in the future, but you don't know. Right, so this is the unknown, this is the known. So we tend to always go back to the known, because the unknown's a bit scary, because it's open-ended. We don't like open-ended stuff. And in the same way that this loop works of a program, that it knows how to run, it'll run that program if it knows how to run it. If it doesn't know the ending of something, it will continually seek out the end result of what it's trying to learn. So when we get repetitive things from the past that keep coming back in our head, and we keep going over the same old rubbish like, I did something, or I regret doing something, or I should have done something I didn't do, the only thing we can take from that is that it's a message for you. And as a message, we need to actually act on that message. If we don't, or if we just keep recycling it and going over the same old thing again, if we never actually analyse it, it will keep coming back forever. And I've described this morning like an old film that you watch. You watch this film and you're watching it all through and it's a bit, you know, it's a thriller and it's going all right, and it gets to the end and it just drops and you think, has it finished? What happened? You know, did she shoot him or marry him? And you don't know, and you're left to finish the end of the film off. Your brain will work for the rest of your life on that film. That's how stupid this is. Right? And if you see a film normally and you get halfway through it, you can go, oh, I think I've seen this before. But if that particular film comes on, within a few frames you're going, oh, it's that stupid film. Oh, good, I wonder what happened. And you watch it to the end again, trying to go, what's the ending? What's the ending? Because we like to finish things off. And the same happens with relationships and things, is that if we come to the end of a relationship, we'll get stuck in it if we can't think, why did it end? Or why did it get in the first place? Right? So you have to analyse it properly. But you have to analyse it properly rather than just make a sweeping statement that, you know, all people are bad that I ever go out with. Well, you know, if all people that you ever go out with are bad or cheat on you, well, then it's just that you're selecting people who are not the right people for you. It's not that all people are bad, because they're not. And I'll come to the bit I was going to have near the end, but a lot of time you need to catch yourself saying, is it true? So when you catch yourself in this sort of negative process, you just say, is this true? Is this absolutely true, this thing I'm thinking? And if you go, yes, well, then you have to sort of deal with it and, right, so how can I get around that? But if it's no, why do you keep puzzling over something that's not true? You don't need it anymore. And the therapy work that I do, I call realised therapy. because there's a split second when I'm talking to people where it goes from this thing that's bothered them all their life that they realise now is not true. It probably wasn't true at the time, or it's the belief they held when they were 5 or 6. And as soon as they see it from another angle, there's like the lights go on, and they get 2 inches taller, and the sadness goes, and the smile comes on the face, and it's a split second thing, and that has rewired the brain. Because you can't carry on with something that you believe true as soon as you find out the reality of it. And you can't go back. You can't switch between the two. If you find out that something that you always thought was true is now a lie, you can't go back to it. The brain just doesn't let you. It's like throwing it out. So, there's a thing called the law of attraction. And the law of attraction is really good. Has anybody come across The Secret or the law of attraction? Okay. There's some bits they missed out of it, really. In general, the law of attraction is that whatever we think about is what we head towards. So if you were planning for your future, if somebody said, right, okay, let's do a drawing of where you want to be in 10 years' time, you wouldn't put in terrible agony and you're about to die. Right? You'd actually put something that you want to head towards. And yet all of us, as soon as we get something wrong with us, pick out what is the most worst possible thing that could happen. And we head off into the future. So we're living in the present. I came across this a few weeks ago when I had to deal with somebody who'd just been diagnosed with cancer. And he rang up and said, I want to be very positive about it. They've given me 6 months of, you know, till I'll be cured or whatever happens. And I just want to live positively for that 6 months and see what happens. And I said, well, okay, but let's set off where you are now. So how do you feel about it? And he went, oh, I'm only going to be positive about this. And I went, okay, but just tell me your biggest fear. And he said, no, I just want to be positive. I said, we're going to be positive in a minute. Just tell me your biggest fear. And I kept needling to actually get to the point where he said, I'm going to die a terrible, agonising, effing death. And I went, good. Because I wanted to break shop taxes. I went, good. And he went, good? I said, no, good that you've said it. Because you would hold that belief and then carry on trying to be positive. You would try and have this positive attitude. Although in the back of your mind, it would actually be saying, well, I'm being positive, but I'm actually going to die an agonising, terrible death. Right? And we can't have that. But now you've let that out, let's deal with it. So if you can imagine yourself now, and then you actually project yourself into the future, this is called worrying. Yeah? We don't project yourself in the future and go, it's going to be fantastic. We have to project yourself in the future and we go, worry, because we don't know quite what's going to happen. It's the unfinished bits. So we hope it's going to be nice. But if we project ourselves in the future and we pick the worst possible thing, right? So me with my terrible agonising death, right? I now take that terrible agonising death and I move it into now. And I live these next 6 months with terrible agonising death, terrible agonising death. Oh, actually, it's working. Oh, no. Oh, right. Oh, it's getting better now. Oh, then you forget what you're worried about. So I'm going to ask you to all think about what you've worried about that was really, really serious. And can you think of one thing that happened? Take all the worries of the past. Can you think of any one thing that happened? It's very rare. Right? You'll probably find 2-3 things in your whole lifetime. From a lifetime of worry, you can dig back and find 2 or 3 things that actually happened. So what was all this about? Okay. So, my talk with this guy was, right, I want you to have a positive attitude, but let's look at this. So, the worst possible outcome is that you'll die an agonising, terrible death. Can't get any worse than that, can it? But, you actually might find that they misdiagnose you. You might find that it's the best thing that ever happened to you, because you give up that crappy job you always hated. You might find that your partner now shows this incredible love towards you that you've never sort of shown lately. It could be. And you go through several examples and then you say, so there's like 999 different things that could happen, but you want to focus on the terrible agonising death, do you, or not? No. So when you start to worry, just think about this, that worry is actually the only emotion that has no value whatsoever. Right? Every other emotion is held by other animals. You don't see animals worry. They might be anxious in certain situations, like dogs when it's fireworks night or whatever. But that's a knowing reaction, because I know I get scared when bangs go off. Bangs are going off. I get scared. So that's this loop working. But worry is of no use to anybody. Right? And it's about how you think about things that changes a whole different thing. Last weekend we went to York, me and my wonderful assistant, and for the first time ever I drove her car. And I'm used to an automatic now, and I'm driving her car, and it was pulling away with me, which is certainly a small car, isn't it? So I'm thinking, oh, it's got a bit of power in it, and I thought, but I'm not accelerating. And then we got to the traffic lights, and it was going, because the throttle had stuck on. So after a bit of messing about, putting up a garage, brain it with WD-40, still no thing, we then end up in the middle of York, pulling up behind cars at traffic lights, where this car now is quite nice while it's going along and you can put it in the right gear. But as you get behind cars, you're now going, and they're all going, why do you turn? And then we end up at this event where we don't know where we're going, and a friend tells me the wrong direction. We end up on a building site, stuck behind builders who are walking casually along, and I'm trying to get through the middle, and it carried on all day like that, and all the weekend. I have a bubble machine on my stand, and I wanted to fill it up with more bubbles. So I reached up the top and held it up, and there was some Velcro on it, so the Velcro held it and then went like that, and I covered this whole side of the body in bubble foam, right? So I'm now absolutely wet through. I'm thinking, well, I don't want it on my trousers. So I'm now having to walk through this massive crowd in York to the toilets, going dripping and doing all this, which I did quite eloquently. But I get in there and I actually take my shirt off and I wring it out. And it takes quite a lot of wringing out when you've got bubble solution. Get all the bubbles out. So I then hold it in front of the hairdryer and hand dryer and can't get it dry. So I ended up with a fully wet, my own wet shirt competition, right? Nipples stuck out, everything. And I'm walking through a crowd of hundreds of people to actually go and get myself a T-shirt. And I thought, well, you know what? Nobody will notice. If I go out and I go, oh, sorry, me. I actually walked through a crowd of hundreds of people and walked and got a T-shirt. Not one person noticed. So your attitude is everything. If you actually have this attitude that the world is against you, it seems to be. Only from the law of attraction thing, because you get whatever you think about. Does anybody here play golf?
Golf, right.
Okay, if you're playing golf and somebody says, whatever you do, don't get in that water over there, we know the next sound that you're going to hear is splosh. Because you concentrate on not getting in the water. Now, the brain doesn't understand not. It understands getting in the water. If you're skidding in a car and you see a tree and you think, oh God, I hope I don't hit the tree, you'll hit the tree, right? Because your brain doesn't understand any negative words. It thinks in sort of values and pictures. So whenever you're thinking something wrong, actually you need to change it round, which we're going to come to at the end. So, anything that you think of, the law of attraction says, you will then notice more of. I mean, the actual law of attraction is that you'll get it into your life. So, if you're looking for love and affection, and you give out love and affection, you get love and affection in your life. If you're actually thinking, oh, I'm in this relationship, I hope I don't get a divorce, I really hope it doesn't come to a divorce, I hope we don't split up, you will split up. Because that's the very thing you're thinking about all the time. You have to take one thing and you have to substitute it for the exact opposite. Because negative and positive, exact opposites. So as soon as you feel that you're doing something negative, and I don't want you to try and catch yourself out every minute of the day going, oh, is that negative, is that positive, should I be thinking negative, should I be thinking positive? Because like I said earlier, if you're positive all the time, it's quite likely you're covering up stuff. It's quite likely you're suppressing these feelings and emotions. And if you suppress feelings and emotions, they have to come out somewhere. And quite often they come out in ill health. So I'm going to get you all to do something now. I'm going to get you all to think happy thoughts, okay? So I want you to put your shoulders back and straighten your head up and think of something really happy that's happened to you. And just enjoy that happiness. Put a smile on your face as you think about it, okay? And as you do that, I want you to think about going into a little curled up ball and leaning your head forward and just pulling your shoulders in and go into that for me. Just lean forward and go like that. Whilst trying to think of this happy thing still. Okay? Right, stay there. Now, you'll notice now you can't hold on to that happy thought while you're doing that, can you? So while you're down there, I want you to think of something sad, but not too sad. Right? Just something that's slightly sad. Okay? And while you're holding on to that sad thought, I want you to go back in the happy position. Right? As you go back in the happy position, try and hold on to that sad thing if you can. And you can't, can you? Right, okay. So what's happening is we hold things in a body. This is why I do energy work as well as the brain work. And it's not as crude as this, but this is happy. Right? And if you see somebody, you can sort of, oh, wow, they're happy. And if they're sad, it's sort of like, oh, God. And if they're depressed, it's almost like they want to do that. Now, people down the road don't go down... You don't see somebody go down the road and go, oh, they're depressed, right? But we do it on the inside. So we keep this, I'm all right bit on the outside. But on the inside, we're actually doing that. We're tensing up and doing all sorts of things. And the effects of stress, which is what that is, because you're tensing up all lots of your body, is that the body is almost ripping itself in half. Because the point of stress is... It was the 10-second fight or flight or freeze where you got out of the way of an animal or you fought it or you stood still and hope it didn't bloody see you. And that's supposed to last for 10, 30 seconds at the most. And your body sent out this fantastic energy throughout all the body apart from certain areas. Because if you're going to be a meal in 30 seconds' time, you don't need your digestive system to work. You don't need a lot of use of your eyesight other than spotting somewhere to hide behind or a tree to climb up. And there's all sorts of bits and bobs that we can relate to stress. You get it in your gut, you get your eyesight, you get double vision and everything else, but you're tensing up lots of different things. But at the same time, the rest of it's going on full tilt. So that's like revving up the car, but not putting it into gear. It's actually, it's doing that. Now, that's all right for 30 seconds. But when we hold on to the thoughts and emotions from the past, we're actually revving the car up all the time. Now, if you see a herd of zebra, whatever you like to call it, they're out in the jungle and the lion's sort of waiting nearby. And it looks for the weakest one or the one on the outside of the pack. And it goes off and chases it. And the zebra runs off. And the rest of the crowd just move to one side a little bit. And they zigzag, zigzag, and it'll either catch it or it won't. If he doesn't catch the zebra, within 10 seconds of that lion leaving, that zebra just bends down and starts eating grass again. That's what we should do if we're animals. Because we're humans, if that happened to us, 10 years' time, you'd still be going, did you hear about me and that bloody lion? He chased me for 20 minutes. And you exaggerate and you add to all the tension and all the things. And that's what we do all the time. We take things that aren't real because thoughts aren't real. Thoughts are an idea that you have that you then keep playing with. And I'm saying sometimes you need to stop playing with it and put it to bed and say, if I analyse it, I can now throw it away. And I'm going to show you how to do that in a few minutes. All right? So you analyse it, you get the learning from it, and then you throw it away. If you don't, it just carries on forever trying to work out what went wrong. And it keeps coming back to you. So if you have a repetitive dream or a repetitive thought or thoughts, there'll usually be a cause behind them. And the cause will be the thread that runs through all of them. So you might have 20 different thoughts going on at the same time that affect you, but there'll be one thread. And that might be anxiety, it might be lack of self-worth, but there's something going on that holds them all together. Once you realise that, you need to do something about that. Because all that's happening is you're running this old loop, probably from a 5-year-old, 5 to 10-year-old, and you're holding on to it, and you're treating it as though it's real. Because if you think about this, if something if you got mugged 10 years ago, and you're still bothered by it, that mugger is still beating you up every day. And you can just let go of it, because he's not actually beating you up every day. You're beating you up every day. So, just want to say a quick bit about perception, and then we'll do another exercise. Everything that we absorb in a day, when we look out at things, we actually take everything in. But then we have to filter it, because that's billions of bits of data coming in, even from this room. So, if I'm going to ask you to look out front here, and I want you to pick out the red things. Okay? Pick out all the red things in this room that you can think of. It's not a memory test. Okay? Just close your eyes now, please. And let's try and recall, without opening your eyes, the blue things. Right? And you can't, can you? Okay, open your eyes again. Because a filtering system went on then. So when I said red things, then the conscious goes, okay, we're now looking for red things. And then when you close your eyes, you've actually filtered out all the blue things. And the same goes for hearings and thoughts and processes, that we actually take things in, but then we go, what do I need? What do I need of this? And we actually go, don't need much of this, and it'll take bits in. I was driving around the road the other day and actually started to slow down, and there was this like, why have you slowed down, Stephen? And then when I looked up front, there was a person about to cross the road, about 50 yards in front of me. Plenty of time to do it and everything else. So I thought, oh, that's why I've slowed down naturally, because of the person outside the road. When I got closer, it was a plastic bag in the side of a hedge. Right? But the height was right for a face, and the shape of the bush and everything else. The brain went, person about to cross the road, danger, slow down. So our brain's doing all this work for us. It's running all these automatic loops. It's doing all this thing. And the only thing we need to do is think about what we're thinking about. So we can now drive down the road, and we can think about what we're going to do that day. We don't actually think about driving. We're actually safer while we're doing that, because our unconscious is doing it, and it's looking after us, because it's also got this survival program in it. Sometimes the brain will give you things that it thinks you need. It will never hurt you unless the pain it gives you is less than what it thought you were going to get if it didn't give you it. I deal with a lot of people with ME, CFS and fibromyalgia, and it's about the brain actually shuts people down. Because they've been overactive for so long in their life, it actually thinks they're going to kill themselves with overwork. And so they get ill, and while they're ill, they actually do slow down, and the brain goes, what a great idea. If I give this person pain or severe tiredness, that'll shut them down for a while, and then they'll recover. And as soon as they start to shut down, these people who overdo things actually then fight the illness, which makes it worse, and they don't recover. So then some smart ass like me says, well, no, I can help you do it, you just change your thoughts, and they'll want to jump on me. Okay, but it does, and I have helped quite a lot of people recover from those things. Because it's just the way we think. Thoughts are not real. We turn them into reality. Everything in this room that's man-made was at one time somebody's idea. And then they put it on paper, and then somebody else designed it, somebody else marketed it, somebody else sold it, and then it came here. But we do have lots of thoughts in a day that we then decide not to do anything with. And we've got to remember that when we have thoughts we don't want, we can either flip them over into being positive, or we can actually just let them wash past us. If you sit on a bench one day and look at the sky and see the clouds going past, we don't actually watch the cloud going past, let it get to the left-hand side and then drag it back and let it replay. We just let it go past and out of our life, because it has no meaning to us, it's just a cloud. And the same with your thoughts. Treat your thoughts as clouds so that they can actually come in. You don't have to work on it. If you don't like it, just ignore it. Go out the other side. We won't touch you on the way. Okay, so now we've got a quick exercise, if you're all willing to do this with me. And this is about changing negatives into positives. So what I'd like you to do is pop your hand out like that. Okay? As though you're going to receive something. And you are. You're going to receive wisdom. Okay? Now I want you to visualise that you've got negative tattooed on the palm of your hand. Okay? And I just want you to flip it over for a minute and look at the back of your hand. And imagine it as having positive written on the back of your hand. Okay? This will work for everybody, I guarantee you. All right? And just, when you start to think of things in the future and you think they're negative, so just pop it back to your palm of the hand again. Right, now what I want you to do is I want you to think of something that's bothering you at the moment that's negative. Right. Any thought that you have that's negative, you don't have to tell me what it is, big or small. You can start with small if you like and try more when you get home. This is a technique you can use for everything. So just think of something negative at the moment. I want you to pop it on your hand, take it out of your brain and visualise it on your hand. Right, cut your hand a little bit so you can actually hold a material thing there. Now, I want you to visualise it being on your hand and actually feel the weight of it on your hand, of this worry or negative thing. Feel the weight of it. Bounce your hand up and down. Just get it so you actually can really feel that you've got something in your hand. So this is coming out of your hand, the head and into your hand. Now give it a texture. Give it a shape. Give it a smell. Give it a sound. Give it any other quality you want. Now what I want you to do is, while you've got it out of your head and in there, I want you to notice that if you pull your hand near to your face, like you're going to put it back in your head, just notice how it affects you more. And then hold your hand out straight in front of you, as far away as you can get, and notice it affects you less. Everybody got that? Are you all right with that? Okay. Now, just bring it back to a midpoint where you're happy with it. Okay? Right. Now, just finish it off. Just remember now, you've got a weight, it's got a texture, it's got a smell. Right? Take it out of your head and you put it in there, and it's a physical thing in your hand. Now, throw it away! Quick as you can. Throw it away. Okay? Now, we're going to do this a few times because what happens is the brain has no understanding of the difference between reality and thought. Right? We've all had a dream where we think our partner's cheating or something and we don't talk to him for a fortnight, but it was just a dream. Right? So your brain doesn't have that capacity. So I want you to pop it in your hand again. So visualise the same thing. And I wouldn't be surprised if you actually can't visualise it in the same way. It's a bit faded or something now, or it weighs less, or it's not as smelly. Okay? So move it away from you again and just sort of notice it doesn't affect you much anymore. And then throw it away. Okay? Now, we're going to do it really fast now. But I want you to add some music. I want you to think of Benny Hill. Okay? So put it in your hand. Throw it away. In your hand, throw it away. In your hand, throw it away. In your hand, in your hand, throw it away. 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 Okay? Now pop your hand out. Can you actually project it into your hand anymore? Can anybody do that? Is it still there? Is it less? Okay. Due to time restraints, I won't keep going over this, but this is something you can do. So, now, I just want you to do it one last time where you just pop it onto your hand. Now, I want you to just flick your hand over, right? In a flicking motion, as though anything that was there, even if it was stuck to it. Have we all changed nappies? You know how to flick a nappy down the toilet? Yeah, just do it like that. Flick your hand over, right? And now notice that on the back of your hand it says positive. Okay, pop your hands down for a minute. Okay, so the opposite of negative is positive. When you catch yourself doing something that affects you, don't pick on yourself and try and be perfect, right? But when something bothers you in your life, just see it as, well, that's negative. You know, is it true? Is it helpful? If it's neither of those things, then you can change it. Just think about how you're going to do that. So, the opposite of positive is negative. Sorry, negative is positive. So, who actually thought of something negative where you can't think a positive on it? Anybody? Any examples? Right, I'll give you one then, because I've dealt with weight loss for some years. So somebody thinks, I need a chocolate biscuit. Right, a packet of chocolate biscuits in the cupboard. And then they think, no, I mustn't have the chocolate biscuit. Right, the brain goes, mustn't have a chocolate biscuit. It goes, chocolate biscuit. It doesn't understand mustn't. Right? So you're in your chair thinking, packet of chocolate biscuit, mustn't have a chocolate biscuit. Mustn't have a chocolate biscuit, mustn't have a chocolate biscuit. Next thing you know, you're into the kitchen still going, I mustn't have a chocolate biscuit, I mustn't have a And then you get the packet out and then you go, I mustn't eat the whole packet. Now, the brain's just heard, eat the whole packet. So you end up sort of like, you're getting your way down the packet. And then you go, well, there's another packet there. I mustn't start the next packet. Oh, off we go again. Because all these things are mustn'ts. Now, what's the opposite of eating a chocolate biscuit?
Not eating
the chocolate biscuit or doing something else. If you get the feeling, if you're on a diet and you want to stick to the diet and you're thinking about chocolate biscuits, then you really ought to think, why am I thinking chocolate biscuits? Am I thirsty? Am I hungry? When did I last eat? When did I last drink? Always start with thirst, because quite often we mistake hunger for thirst and vice versa. And we do that by sort of, on Thursday, have a cup of tea and a biscuit. And then you think the biscuit overcame the hunger, but actually it's the drink that overcame the thirst. So first of all, you say to yourself, well, am I thirsty? No, just had half a glass of water. Okay, am I hungry? Well, I ate an hour ago, so I don't need a chocolate biscuit. Perhaps I need company. Because when we're busy, we don't actually feel hungry. As soon as we stop being busy, we go, food, where is it? Okay. So get used to the idea that there's negative. And if you can do the hand flipping bit, what you'll find is at some point in the near future, something negative will come up and you won't realise it's negative, but your hand will come out like that. Yeah? And you go, what's that down there? And you go, oh, I was thinking of something negative. And literally you can just flick it away. You can just go, right, well, positives. And as soon as you start thinking about the positive, you replace the negative. The technique I showed you of the sort of putting a small furry object or whatever in your hand is when you've got something really that you want to get rid of and then you can throw it away or whatever. But if it's just something, a fleeting thing, you can actually just catch yourself out with these negative thoughts that affect your life in a way that you don't want and actually just change them. Okay, I've been Stephen Blake, you've been wonderful. Thank you very much.